you're listening to Craig Walker's Future of Podcast, where we bring together conversations with thought leaders from across the world to unpack what's next in the design of products, services, and experiences. I'm Jeremy Walker, director and co-founder of Craig Walker, a design and research agency with a mission to design the greatest positive impact for the greatest number of people. And for this series, Peter Farrago, a lead designer at Craig Walker, explores the future of care with leaders from around the world. In this episode, she has a conversation with Erin Bennett, who currently works in the social and innovation team at Uniting, one of Australia's largest not-for-profit providers of services in aged care, disability, community, early learning, education, and training. Erin's team looks at systemic issues in the care space and how design innovation can create social impact. Erin's path to working in aged care was unique. While working as an interior designer on a seniors living facility, she saw how broken this system was and how even small changes would have a huge impact on how people lived. After retraining through studying design thinking and strategic innovation, she now works to help solve a range of problems that propel social disadvantage by listening and learning from Australia's senior population. Today, we hear her talk about the barriers facing the care sector and whether she believes it's possible to solve them through incremental change, whether we need to tear it down and start again in order to meet the needs of future senior populations.
So, Erin, what makes working for not-for-profit organisations different in this aged care space?
Sure. I think for-profits have obviously shareholders that they need to report to, while not-for-profits really need to be commercial in their decisions. There is a remit to really look at caring for the disadvantaged and also creating models that are affordable for all Australians. And so this is a really unique place to design from. And, you know, you can start to put forward models that are considering these outliers in society.
What are some of the challenges or barriers in this space?
There are so many challenges. The biggest barriers for success are actually the workforce and the sustainable funding of the sector, which are just the tip of the iceberg. So I think the workforce, we don't have a workforce that will be able to sustain the amount of seniors that will be coming into the space in the next 10 years. Underlying that, you have compartmentalised products. You have a system that has been established that disempowers purpose for older Australians. You have an affordable housing crisis for both the workforce and people on the pension who don't own their own homes. You have poor systems that have high compliance and an ageing population with a shrinking tax base. So just a few issues.
Easy.
I think underpinning that, you also have that housing is a state issue and care is a federal issue. And it's the responsibility of providers to bring these things to actually interconnect. Community is the outcome of whatever the provider has in place. And so connection, or on the other hand, social isolation, are the outcome of how this is prioritised within each organisation or each provider. Then you have home care services. There is a huge blind spot in the government promoting ageing in place in either your home or retirement living. The built form hasn't been set up for purpose to age in place safely. And remaining connected to a community become the responsibility of the older person, which is incredibly challenging if you are frail or have limited access to money. So there's lots of challenges, but actually as a designer, that is quite exciting because you have opportunities to start to look at solving some of these problems. You can't solve all of them, and so you have to, you know, pick your battle, but it is a really challenging environment and complex space to be designing from.
Yeah, I mean, as a designer, like, and looking at all these challenges, how do you prioritise? I mean, I'm sure there's a few ways that you do this, but how do you prioritise which challenges you kind of want to take on?
As part of my new role, it's looking at the more systemic problems that are underpinning those particular problems. And then it is a process of prioritising with the organisation which ones we want to go after. And that is more looking at a 10-year kind of time frame of how do we want to strategically stack our projects and programs to work up to that systemic change. And that's across four kind of key levers. So that's advocacy, that's design and innovation, that's more traditional research, that's thought leadership. So there's kind of coming at it from, and also partnerships, sorry, I forgot to mention. So there's tackling at it from a number of different ways, but it's strategically looking at what are the priorities that we see as those key systemic levers that we want to go after, because as you can see, there's just so many that you could go after.
Yeah, it's almost insurmountable, that mountain of problems.
Yeah, and I think that's why partnerships and really thinking about how do you collaborate on these issues is going to be key to actually disrupting the sector, because the problems can't be solved just in silos. They actually need to be a shared responsibility.
Talking about partnerships, it's super interesting. Can you give us an example of a kind of a partnership that you've witnessed or been involved in that has felt really innovative to you in this space?
So I think that when we look at international examples, there's some really cool examples out there. Singapore has some really similar challenges to what Australia does in terms of its ageing population and its workforce challenges. And so they're looking at that as a countrywide problem. And they've established a foundation and the Singapore Design Council that do a number of different design projects to be tackling this, and then that is pushed out and available for all providers to be accessing. And I think we need to be thinking about that in a more similar fashion in Australia, of how do we use design and share that IP so that we can actually uplift others. There's a lot of smaller providers that wouldn't have particular resources. So how do we actually think about that as a more systemic way of designing? So I think Singapore do it really well.
That's super interesting. So it's around like the sharing and distribution of ideas so that everybody can be across the same things and kind of move ahead together.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that if those resources are developed, how can they be shared? And how can everyone learn from that? And how can we uplift the sector in that way?
If we could take a global perspective now, what does aged care look like around the world as compared to Australia from your perspective?
I think when we think about systemically what's underpinning care in Australia, what's really interesting is when we look at international models, the culture of care and whose responsibility that is. So in Australia, the role of care is really on service providers to provide that care, and younger generations aren't really stepping in to provide that care. It's just culturally kind of how we've been set up and established. Mm. When we look at other countries, the role of care is dispersed through families, through community, and so there's a shared responsibility in who's providing care. And I think we need to be thinking more longer term around how care is shared through community, and what do we need to shift in the culture of care and who provides care? And does that need to be, you know, ingrained earlier in the journey in, you know, young children thinking about education? Or how do we actually think about dispersing the responsibility of care through society more long term? Within 10 years, there will be 3 times the amount of people needing seniors care in Australia, and we don't have the workforce or the tax base to support that. So how do we actually need to reconsider dispersing the role of care? And absolutely there's a role for aged care and home care and retirement living, but how do we think about systemically how do we need to share the role of care as a country?
Yeah. Does that come down to the individual as well, thinking kind of forward and starting to set up their life differently? I don't know.
Potentially. I think that when we think about that systemically, it could be where in education do we need to start to shift some of that? Where do we need to think about that in partnerships or in you know, advocacy? How do we need to think about that differently? So yes, it could be up to your personal way you set things up, but also I think we need to be thinking more systemically. I think it's also really interesting to see through the design research that I've done, how hard it is for people who don't have family.
Yeah.
And actually what the quality of life and outcomes are in that space. And I think that's why we need to be thinking about this more broadly, not just from a personal level, because it's such a different journey for those that go it alone.
So Erin, who do you design for, and what does this mean to the way you design products and services?
It's really design 101. I'm always asking for who are you designing for, and what is the problem that you're needing to solve, and then like what is underpinning that problem. And getting really clear on what the problem is that you're trying to solve for both them and for us as an organisation. Obviously, you can't design for everyone, but I think when you think about designing in this space, aging is common to all of us. And so looking at what are those principles and what's important in the aging process and designing from that space. When I'm going into particular design projects, I think it's really looking at who are the core segments and audiences in that particular challenge. And there will definitely be common principles and themes across those different cohorts. But I would always want to be capturing the voice of outliers in that situation, particularly making solutions accessible for seniors, because, you know, 2/3 of people over the age of 65 have some form of disability, whether that be sight or hearing or physical or cognitive. So we need to be making sure that their voice is included in any design solution. Mm. But I also think it's really crucial to include a First Nations voice within your research, because they are a real outlier in outcomes for aging. And the other crucial component is to include the staff on the front line, because they are the ones that are delivering that care, and they are having to troubleshoot on the ground every single day. And these two pieces need to be designed together.
Are frontline staff traditionally left out of the conversation?
I think they can be, yeah. And so I purposefully include them in that.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I mean, if they have to deliver the solution and they're not set up for them to deliver that effectively, I can imagine that that would be a real issue for your design.
Yeah, totally. And I think that because of the workforce shortage, finding out what's important and motivating for them as well is key to retaining staff. And so you need to be creating solutions that are engaging and create really, you know, great pathways for careers as well. So I think if you're designing those two things together, you can create something that's really interesting.
What is working well in the aged care space, and what are you seeing in your role that's making you hopeful?
In the past few years, I've seen a real shift in attitudes towards design and the actual customer experience across the sector, which is exciting. I think for quite a number of years, the sector has had a really tough run with the Royal Commission and then with COVID. So providers are now starting to kind of look up and embrace this space a little bit more, which is great, because I don't think it's typically been in that sector. So I think it's kind of catching a little bit of a wildfire in that space, which is really exciting to see. You know, it might not sound like rocket science, but you know, the customer voice is now starting to be included in that decision making. And I think there's a lot more ways for that to go. But I think that seniors' voice is now becoming a really important part of that process. And that's a really big shift I've seen in the sector.
From the Australian context, do you believe it is possible to fix some of the issues facing aged care incrementally? Or do you think we need to tear it down and start again?
My answer would be both. But I absolutely do think that it's possible to solve some of these problems. And I see that with incremental innovations every day. I realise I've probably spent a lot of time talking about all of the problems. For each of these problems, there are possible solutions. So I remain really optimistic. Providers are looking at how best to address the issues with the compartmentalised system and how to better integrate within their own patches. So people are trying to solve that integration and within their own sort of patches. I've also seen a rise in providers taking an initiative to better design and connect communities. I think there could be more, way more done in this space, but I think, you know, I think it's an area that people are really focusing on. Mm. I've also seen providers looking at better mental health strategies for seniors, and this has been such a big blind spot, and I think it still remains a blind spot. I also think there's some really interesting uses of health tech and the use of data that are emerging, and I think this will only increase, you know, exponentially. But I don't believe that this sector gets enough attention, particularly from a design and innovation perspective. So the sector has been so busy putting out fires that it rarely gets a chance to look up, and it is ripe for disruption. And I hope it does get disrupted. What I do worry about is who does that disrupting, and that the experience and care are at the foundations of that disruption.
Who are you worried will do the disrupting?
Well, I think it's just such a vulnerable cohort of people, and that, you know, the motivating factors of whoever's disrupting that have the right intentions of, you know, really providing quality care for older people. You know, if it's driven by profit, sometimes that can get lost. I think there is an opportunity to also create a whole new model. So start with a bit of a blank sheet, because what is currently on offer is turning into a bit of a Frankenstein, and it's something that people don't really want. In my ideal world, we would create a model that is steeped in customer and staff insights, so that when you retire to when you pass away can be some of the best years of your life. And I think that that would be a really wonderful place to design from. With many providers, they're improving their own patches for their own clients and customers. But to think about this as a collective is where the power is actually at.
Yeah, I guess that goes back to that Singapore example of like, how do you start to share your ideas and innovate together, rather than all separate providers coming up with separate solutions that then the end user has to kind of understand how it works with that provider, not across the board.
Yeah, yeah. And the solutions will bubble up in their own little patches, but how do we actually share those and lift the sector more broadly?
You spoke about providers helping with the compartmentalization of services, helping to simplify that, and also the idea around connecting communities. Can you think of an example for either of those?
Yeah, sure. There's a model in Canberra called LDK, and they've really created their own island of an incubator, I guess, in how to do that. However, there are some issues with that, but they have really doubled down on connecting community in that space. And so, you know, they work really, really closely with all of the other community providers, like the Lions Club, a whole heap of different other ways of connecting seniors that are surrounding that particular site, and then providing a whole heap of activities for people who live on that site. And so it's a bit of a melting pot of community activation there, but they're really funding and intentionally connecting people who live in that community. Where that model is tricky is that it's not an affordable model for all Australians. And so how do we think about what we could learn from that, and what parts can we adapt in a more affordable model?
Yeah, I imagine that really localised community-specific work would be quite expensive to do and to connect all those people, but I guess that model could definitely be scaled, or the learnings, as you say.
Community is one of those kind of things that no one really owns, and it's really up to providers to run this. So as I mentioned earlier, housing is a state issue, care is a federal issue. No one's really owning community connection. And so we see so much social isolation because this isn't really owned by anyone. And whose responsibility is that? Particularly in independent living and in home care, who is responsible for connecting these people and ensuring that they are socially connected? There is some funding in care packages that people can put towards that, and there is some, you know, activations that happen in retirement living. But I think the issue is when those communities become really, really frail, if it's independently led by those that live on the site, it's really hard for them to remain connected if they're really frail. And so there needs to be someone who's responsible for keeping that community alive and connected. And it's a bit of a blind spot in the system that no one's really closely looking at.
You touched on it earlier, but I know that a particular focus area for you is around mental health in seniors. Could you talk to us about that and why it is of interest to you?
Sure. So generally, when we think of suicide and mental health, older people don't really come to mind. But Australian men aged 80 and over actually have the highest suicide rate in Australia. And older adults are also less likely to use specialty mental health services. I remember going and doing a whole heap of user research, and you know, the language even used by some of the older Australians that I met was, you know, oh, they're a little bit, you know, they've got something wrong in their head, but I'm not sure, they're a bit funny today, you know. And so the language and education also around, you know, mental health and having the right language and being able to talk about those things is really a tricky space for seniors to navigate.
Yeah.
But social isolation and loneliness consistently comes up in my research. You know, I remember during COVID talking to some people on the ground, and they said the biggest killer was actually loneliness, particularly in retirement living and home care, because people were so isolated, and it's been really hard to reinvigorate that connection after that period of isolation. So if the government are actually going to encourage people to age in their homes or in retirement living, they need to actually really focus and address some of the loneliness issues and mental health issues that are happening in this space. And it's not a current focus because there's so many other issues that they're trying to address. And so, yeah, it's a real gap in the sector. So I feel quite passionately because the people that you meet, you can see that they would benefit from particular services. Where this also is problematic is, you know, if you're on a pension, the affordability of actually getting mental health support would chew up most of your pension. So it's not an accessible option for a lot of people either. So it's quite a big issue in this space. The added layer of encouraging people to age in place comes with a further range of issues, such as social isolation and the pressures of those who are actually caring for that person who is aging in place, whether that's a partner, and the pressures on that person as well. And so, you know, how do we actually better support the carers as well in that space, because yeah, their mental health is also really struggling because they're watching their loved one pass away, but also there's a lot of pressure in caring for someone and you might not have the supports that you need as well.
From your perspective, what are some of the issues aging people in Australia face?
There's actually such a loss of identity when people retire, and the impact of that is huge for both physical and mental health, but also staying connected to a community. And this is perpetuated the older and more frail you become. And so how do we think about purpose for aging Australians? This is underpinned by an inability to earn an income and the perceived value that people see the older generation as a burden. And it's particularly hard for those who are on a pension. So if you're on a pension, and the struggles of living on a pension in Australia with the rising cost of living really impacts the quality of your life. And I actually think that there's a potential workforce that are dormant. When we go out and do user research, they're, you know, coming up with all of these ways to try and make money for their community because they know that they can't actually earn the money themselves. And I think if we listen carefully to these cohorts, I wonder what pathways for appropriate work and fulfillment could be found for older generations. And while there are some volunteering opportunities for seniors, I don't think this has been fully explored and has a potential to be completely redesigned. There's some really great social enterprise happening in other sectors like disability or domestic violence. And I wonder how this could look in a seniors context. That would be such a really interesting piece to design of how do you connect purpose to, generating value for older Australians.
And do you think this would kind of shift the dial a bit on some of the mental health issues that you're seeing as well?
Yeah, because people are craving purpose and they can't earn an income, but they are wanting to fill their day and have something to look forward to. And with the inability to earn an income, or if you're, you know, frail, there's still value that you can give to society. But I think it's sitting down and listening and learning about what actually could you do, and what would give you that purpose, and kind of starting to connect pathways for people. I think that also would in turn connect communities and start to break down some of that social disconnection that we're seeing. So that community connection, that responsibility of who looks after that, if we start to look at how do we actually start to solve for purpose, those kind of levers will start to have a bit more of a groundswell in those areas of social connection and community engagement.
Does that idea around an individual's purpose come up in your work and what you're designing day to day?
Yeah, absolutely. Like, it just comes up across all your research. Yeah. A lack of purpose, or a lack of being able to know what to do with their time or their day. I remember working on an aged care program where it was around lived experience and a group of residents that were really engaged in a co-design process and became kind of the go-to person to be able to design for their home. And some of the outcomes of that were amazing. They were like, oh, this is the most exciting thing I've done in, you know, 30 years. And wow. So like then they were engaged for over a year and they were, you know, had a real role in the community. And these people were in their 90s. So I think that there's always value and purpose for anyone at any age. It's just about listening and learning and connecting, because if you don't connect, it's actually a really missed opportunity for those people.
Over the last few years, how has COVID and the technological advancements and digital disruptions that followed affected the aged care sector?
I think there's been a lot of incremental innovation. People have had to troubleshoot through really tricky times. And so out of that, the increase of how quickly tech has been adopted by an audience that weren't necessarily tech savvy has forced people to actually adopt a lot of that, which has been a good thing because it, you know, it now makes the accessibility of using tech in that space a lot easier to digest, and it's kind of warmed up that audience. The frontline staff have had to do incremental innovation constantly in that space. There's so much health tech, and how do we adopt some of that health tech in the seniors space? So for example, I was speaking to someone in a clinical practitioner the other day, and they were looking at how they use AI glasses to treat someone that was 8 hours away in a remote community by using these glasses on the ground with the care staff. And wow. So they can check and they can treat that person, get them the right care that they need just through these particular tech glasses. So I think there'll be so much adoption of health tech into the aged care space. Another kind of key one to that is how people will be using data. So typically in this space, there's so much paperwork, and it is pen and paper paperwork. And so I think providers will be really looking at how do they get smart using their data to find efficiencies, because it is an underfunded sector. And so you need to get smart using your data.
Have those kind of two areas started to shape the future roadmaps or innovation within your organisation?
Yeah, so I think so when we're looking at innovation, there's like kind of a couple of different types of innovation. So you've got that more incremental innovation, you've got adjacent, and that more disruptive innovation. And so, you know, you have your day-to-day ops and your tech teams really looking at that incremental, like how do we start to incubate and test some of these ideas and then start to scale them. I think that the funding part of that is tricky, but they're definitely playing in this space. And then from a more disruptive innovation perspective, what are we looking at systemically, and what do we want to go and solve in that space? And tech and data will become sometimes part of that solution, but not necessarily. So I think it's looking at both parallels, and how do you start to play and start to design solutions in both an incremental way and a more disruptive way.
So I guess in that more disruptive space, what are some of the big long-term trends you are seeing in the aged care sector, and what do you believe is driving change?
The long-term trends I'm seeing is really how do we integrate services more, whether that be in home care or retirement living. I think that there's still a way to go in aged care of people forecasting, because I think people are so busy just putting out fires that they aren't really thinking that bigger picture. And so that's where I think there is room for that disruption that I spoke about. But there's the integration is a long-term trend, and it takes a long time for big providers to actually shift from what the current model is to integrating that. There's so much operational challenges in shifting to integrate those, because they're state and federally funded. But that integration is that long-term trend. I think aging in place is obviously what the government are promoting, and there's quite a few gaps in that model. So it'll be interesting to see how that further evolves over time, because there's a bit of a high care needs gap in that, between what you can receive in a home care package and the high care that you would need in aged care.
Based on your experience, what are you starting to see as the future of aged care?
There's obviously an affordable housing crisis in Australia, and at the moment there's a lot of sites that have been decommissioned or are looking to be decommissioned. So they're the older kind of daggier aged care facilities. And what happens with them, I think, will be interesting to think about. So how could they become part of a solution in the affordable housing crisis, and particularly for seniors? How could we adapt some of those spaces? How could the government incentivize some of that so that there is safe spaces for seniors to live, and that those sites don't necessarily need to go into full reconstruction or deconstruction and then reconstruction, that they can be reutilized? And obviously that's, you know, better for the environment. That's construction has such long lead times. I think also with that, you might actually start to be able to solve the social and affordable housing wait list. You might be able to take quite a big proportion of seniors off that list if you were starting to think about what you could do with those decommissioned or older sites as an affordable solution for seniors.
So starting to think about how you repurpose the sites that are no longer fit for purpose.
Exactly. So, yeah, I've been into sites which are empty. They might have 80 apartments in there and there's people who have nowhere to live. How do you think about repurposing some of that? The problem is that it's not financially viable for providers at the moment. So how do you create or advocate for initiatives to think about that as part of your solution or part of the solution in Australia?
Yeah, or incentivize it.
Yeah, yeah. So there are some now, there are some incentives that are starting to come through. But part of the problem is that the DAs are linked to residential aged care. And so it might not be that it's residential aged care, but it's providing care for seniors in a more independent way, or it might be for aging in place. You know, it might become one of those kind of repurposed as an apartment for people to age in place rather than it being a residential aged care facility.
If we look at the not so distant future, say in 10 years, can you paint a picture of your hopes for the aged care industry?
I actually think that there's a whole new product category that could emerge. I keep using this metaphor, but at the moment, the system is a bit of a Frankenstein, and it would be so cool to be able to design something that people want and that the end of their life can be really, really fulfilling. And I think if we could design a product from scratch with a blank piece of paper with other providers and really embed customer voice and the workforce voice in that, it would be where I would be wanting to start. And really looking back at what are the principles that are underpinning that are important to aging for everyone, and making sure that those solutions are for everyone and they're affordable for everyone. So that would be my kind of dream picture of what I would be wanting to design. And I think it's possible. Like, I don't think that, why is that not possible? People can come in and disrupt sectors and industries within a year or two. Why could this not be disrupted? So yesterday I met someone from a leading tech provider, and they have a design team of 600 people designing their products and services. But the problem is we just don't have the budget to have the capacity of those design teams in not-for-profits. It's not as well funded. It's not as sexy or desirable to work in that space. You know, we work really in a really lean environment, and the problems are highly complex. And so how could you partner, you know, with big tech providers or with other providers? Is there some strategic social impact that they are wanting to, you know, lean into where we could partner for certain things? Or imagine if you could use the power of those 600 smart people to design for social impact and good. And I think there's some really interesting ways you could be thinking about partnerships in that space and harnessing people who are wanting to design for social impact. So I think that there's lots of different ways to think about this space, but I think that design and innovation is one of those really interesting places to play in this particular sector, because there's so much that you can do.
Thanks, Erin. You've given us so much to think about. You've really shifted the way that I think about aged care. So thank you so much for your time today. It's been really great.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Well, that brings us to the end of this conversation. It's been a fascinating insight into design thinking in the care sector, how we might need to shift our culture of care in Australia if we're going to meet the needs of our aging population, and how the voices of frontline staff and customers will need to be prioritised to find effective ways forward. We hope we've left you with something to think about in the context of the products, services, or experiences you're designing. A big thank you to our guest, Erin Bennett, for joining Peter Farrago in conversation, with production and editing by Tom Hogan. The Future Of podcast was brought to you by Craig Walker, a global design and research agency that works with the world's leading organizations. Find out more about the work we do at craigwalker.com.au/journal.